Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the PSR Podcast. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and if you'd like to come alongside and partner with us financially, just go to bebroken.org/donate to make your gift, and we are so thankful for you supporting this work. All right, in today's episode, I sit down with Trevor Hansen, who is a marriage and family therapist who specializes in attachment issues. Trevor opens up about his own personal journey, sharing how his struggles actually inspired his work that he's doing today. We discuss the origins and the fluidity of attachment styles, practical steps to move from anxious to secure attachment, and the importance of self-compassion in healing. Trevor also introduces his TEMPO framework and offers resources to help you take your next step towards secure attachments. Now, I found this to be a really insightful, encouraging conversation for anyone wanting to better understand themselves and build healthier relationships. Now, you can learn more about Trevor and his resources by visiting theartofhealingbytrevor.com. For additional resources, visit our website at bebroken.org or check out the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And you know it, friends, I want to ask you to rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. For now, let's dig deep into today's conversation with Trevor. Well, all right, folks, we have Trevor Hansen with us. So, Trevor, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so before we get into the topic that we are going to talk about that is something you're super passionate about in terms of helping people navigate, I want people to get a little just bit of background on you. So just why don't you tell us a little bit of your own story and then how you got into the work that you're currently doing?
Yeah, definitely. So these, I guess both of those overlap together pretty strongly. So I am a licensed marriage and family therapist now, and I focus on issues of attachment, specifically the anxious attachment, and helping people go from anxious to secure. And we can talk more about that, what that actually means as we go. But I never really thought that I was going to be in this field at all. Never had my eye on it. If you would have asked me, you know, so many years ago when I was like graduating college and doing all that, what I would be doing, and this would not be on the list at all. And so it's kind of curious like how this actually happened. So I guess to get there, we have to understand that my background was that I myself was dealing with anxious attachment throughout my life, but not knowing it. And essentially what that means for those who aren't familiar with the term is that you have kind of just this underlying fear that others aren't really going to be there for you, like that they'll leave, or fear of rejection, kind of fearing losing connection. And in friend groups for me, I always kind of felt like the other guys in particular didn't really want to hang out with me, wouldn't want to invite me. I kind of just felt like I didn't have a place, but I didn't really know why. There wasn't something I could point my finger to, but I felt that it was true. And funny enough, the more you feel like it's true, the more you behave in ways that make it true, right? Like I wouldn't maybe engage as freely, or I didn't show up as confidently. And when people aren't confident, they're not engaging, they're harder to connect with. And so I wouldn't get invited to things and I would have more rejection. When it came to dating, it looked like with the women, I felt like, really just fearful and anxious that I had to prove myself. Like I have to show them that like I'm enough and that I'm a contender, that like I'm just as good as anybody else that they could go after, and feeling kind of like this scarcity around love and feeling like it could just like kind of go away at any minute. And then it overlaps with this just kind of negative sense of self. At least part of you feels like you're not good enough, or part of you kind of has these self-doubting narratives where maybe other parts of me felt pretty confident. And the part of me that felt really confident in like career aspects. So I graduate from college. I immediately get, hired by Tesla. And I worked for them in like a finance and procurement space. And procurement's a fancy word for purchasing things for a business. And so I would like negotiate contracts. I was doing, you know, just buying of things, making justifications for why certain things needed to be purchased, and sending them sometimes all the way up the chain to a to Brother Musk, and I was doing that work, and it was really enjoyable. And I feel like that work even was kind of like helping to soothe my anxiety around not being good enough, because it felt really cool. It was a really cool job. And, you know, maybe people saw me as enough then, like, oh, I'm getting my worth by what I'm doing, right? More kind of clues on what the anxious attachment's like. But in the shortest way possible, I'll tell you where it all kind of came crashing down is I was in a relationship that was emotionally abusive. Because the other individual had their own fears, their own anxieties around abandonment, betrayal, that were created through childhood experiences and reinforced through adult experiences. And so I don't demonize this person in my story. I understand, you know, with empathy, maybe the insecurities that she dealt with, but her insecurities and the way she dealt with them looked like controlling me. And a lot of that control took on forms of kind of abuse in a way. And I left that relationship with she didn't give me a broken jaw, but I had a broken jaw because of a skiing accident. I left with less confidence than I started with, which already was pretty small. So I was drained. I was having panic attacks, nightmares all the time. And I also got laid off from Tesla around the same time. So I was like, man, if I have any empathy for Job in the Bible, like, this might be my Job moment where I feel like I just got all of it at once. Obviously, probably nothing in comparison to what he was going through, but I kind of felt like it was my Job moment, right? And I go back and I say, what am I going to do? And so I go to therapy, start to realize that it's really cool. There's some really amazing opportunities there. A lot of healing, which we can get into in detail, that involves trusting God and relying on something bigger than myself, you know, and in the process, discovering kind of my new calling. I felt like it was an assignment, and I take it that way. Like, I take it as a calling. Like, I pray for the people that I work with constantly. I even though my program and what I do isn't necessarily faith-based per se. It's faith-influenced for sure. But yeah, I just kind of feel like now the mission that God has given me is to help people become secure, which is, you know, letting go of fear, leaning into faith. And through my own process, that's where I've landed, feeling significantly more secure, which resulted in my marriage now, which is a beautiful marriage. It's healthy. It's amazing. And so, yeah, that was a long answer to your question, but I feel like it's hard to break that all up.
No, it's good. And we, you know, in our ministry, story is of tremendous value. And we never want to have somebody come onto our podcast and say, hey, let's just go right into a bunch of facts and information and theory and, you know, models and without like, well, who's this coming from? Like, who are you, Trevor? So it makes a difference in terms of being able to say, the fact that what you're doing now and your own story have this beautiful intersection. It's not as if you just, you know, read everything from a book and said, here, I'm just going to now regurgitate this to people. Like, you're like, I've practiced this myself. I know what it's like to have anxious attachment and also what it's like to go through that process to eventually live from a secure attachment. So with that in mind, I mean, we've used this, you know, you've used these terms and attachment. Can you give us, first of all, just kind of the broad overview of just attachment styles? Like, where does that come from? Why is it? And also, why is that important to an individual to know and also maybe to their relationships?
Yeah. There's so many pieces to this, and maybe I'll try to break it up a little bit. So the idea of the attachments is I keep finding like new ways of defining it that I feel like resonate better. And it, really at the heart of it is that we have experiences early on in life. It could be as early as, you know, brand new baby. These experiences are things like where we have the intersection of a moment where we need to have some sort of need met, either physical or emotional. And that could be eye contact. That could be soothing and bouncing when you're crying. When you're a little older, it could be maybe when you make a mistake or you do something that you shouldn't have done, and then you need somebody to understand you, to hold you, to help you work through it, not in shame, but in like a spirit of love, right? All these different needs, validation, empathy, touch, we kind of get the idea that there's probably a whole list of these needs. And depending on our experience with our primary caregivers, like mom and dad, we will then grow up having programmed into us a sense of safety and security where we believe that those needs will be filled. We feel confident that we're worthy of having those needs filled. And we generally like have kind of a hopeful view of others. And we trust that others are going to be there for us if we had those needs pretty consistently filled. And on the flip side of things, and mind you, the adult version of that, where that leads to is secure attachment. You connected with and attached to mom and dad in a sense of safety and security. And then you connect with others in a way that's safe and secure. Then there's the insecure attachments, which is where those needs maybe weren't filled consistently. And this could be outright abuse that you suffered, but for most people, it doesn't actually look like that. And they might even be confused because they look and they say, mom and dad are really loving and amazing and awesome. Like, why would I feel this way? Well, they're also human beings. And it could have come from really simple things, such as having a mother who maybe dealt with her own anxiety. And because she was so much in her own head all the time, that maybe she wasn't quite as aware of the little tiny cues that you were sending over to her that said, I need some connection, right? Like when you laughed or smiled, maybe she wasn't as responsive to the laugh or smile that said, yep, I'm here with you. I see you and I'm connected to you. And so it doesn't have to be big, heavy, overt moments, right? Or it could have looked like a dad who was maybe really critical all the time, trying to help you to be your best or trying to help you to keep, you know, the commandments of or whatever that looks like, right? Religious focus and saying, well, we got to be obedient. And that comes from a place of love, right? But in that attempt to solicit things like obedience, maybe you started to have programmed into you this belief that, well, love's got to be earned. Like I've got to earn this. Like I'm not just inherently valuable and lovable. And I've got to be on edge all the time, right? It's kind of like, I got to put in overtime this weekend so I can make sure to get paid. It's the same mentality of, I got to get in there and work or else I'm not enough. And then you grow up with kind of those underlying beliefs, right? About love has to be earned. People aren't going to be there for me. And you might start to feel a little bit more clingy in relationships if like, you know, either in dating or in marriage, you're the person who really feels like you got to solve the argument right then and there because it feels catastrophic if it's not. Or you start to feel this fear that others are just going to like leave. They're not going to be there for you. And so that's like a really simple, I guess simple is really long, definition of the anxious versus secure attachment. It really comes down to how your nervous system was programmed to feel about love and connection through either your needs being met or your needs not being met in childhood.
And you know what I find fascinating about that is, you know, especially for children who grew up in multi-sibling families, is how each of the children is uniquely, the dynamics are unique among each of the children. So they might be growing up in literally the exact same environment with the exact same parents. And the way some of that programming hits one of the children versus another could be different based on personality, all kinds of other things. And so that's one aspect I think that is important to note. But also, can you talk also about the, because we, some of this is a diagnostic tool, right? It's helpful to be able to see where are we in terms of these attachment styles. But can you talk about the goodness of the fluidity of the model? That it's not like once you find out what your attachment style is, you are forever stuck in that attachment style.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I want to pair it with part of your first question too, because I think when we recognize the impact of an attachment style, we also recognize how important it is that there is fluidity and changing it is super valuable. Because you might be sitting here listening and going like, okay, cool, I get that. But why would I want to change it? And I kind of want to answer that first before we talk about like how it is changed and what's there. So in a relationship dynamic, I kind of explained in my own context, using just a small little subset of circumstances where I was socially connecting with other men, right? Usually people think of it within romantic relationships, and we'll talk about that too. But when I was connecting with other guys, I was experiencing more rejection and isolation because my lack of confidence showed up as neediness, or I try to be the funniest guy in the room in order to be like enough, right? You get the guy who's like really needy and tries to be the funniest guy in the room all the time, and he's not really that fun to hang out with. Like, it's just the truth. And it doesn't mean that those other people are mean or unloving or not Christ-like or whatever you want to say. Like, that's not the case. It's just not in our human nature to feel terribly connected to that. Just like it's not in our human nature to feel connected when somebody's maybe criticizing us heavily. In a marriage dynamic, that's one of the ways an anxious attachment plays out, is that the anxious partner already has kind of a heightened sense of sensitivity around their needs not being met. And so if their needs aren't met, they might come down heavy on their partner. Like, you're always late. You never show up on time. I've been waiting here. I cooked all this dinner. You don't appreciate me. You're like diagnosing your partner as like unappreciative and unloving. And they're like, I just really stink at managing my time and I don't know what to do. And they start to feel like they're not good enough. And maybe that's where they go into there with kind of like either defensiveness. Well, I'm working hard for this family. Aren't I doing enough? Or they just like withdraw. They're like, holy goodness, this is a lot to deal with. I'm going to pull back. I'm not going to talk right now, which is infuriating for an anxiously attached, because all of a sudden it feels like your partner's abandoning you. So let's come back to it. Essentially, the anxious attachment creates a lot of the very thing that the anxiously attached are afraid of, which is abandonment, right? You create abandonment through maybe like criticism or clinging too hard or, you know, getting after your partner or trying to be the funniest guy in the room. That was me, right? And so you create the very thing that you're afraid of the most, and it creates just this wicked spiral where a lot of your relationships are disconnected. They're not as strong as you want. You just don't have peace in being able to kind of be on your own when you need to be on your own. You know, a night alone might feel just terrifying because it might feel like it means that you're just like unlovable. And so you find yourself alone. So those are some of the issues that it creates. And I wanted to set that stage to understand the value of changing it. So when we talk about the fluidity, the answer is just yes, it is fluid. It's not like your height. Well, apparently you can change your height. I saw some guy who like got his shins extended through like plastic surgery. And I said, whoa, that sounds horrible. But yeah, how in the world? But it's not okay. Generally, your height is not changeable. It's not like your height. It is something that is changeable. And what we need to look at there in order to say, but how, we look at how it was created. And an attachment style is something that can always be created. And it was created through emotionally transformative experiences. And those experiences are either unsafe and they create fear, scarcity, and anxiety, or they are safe and they create feelings of confidence, security, and peace.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we're talking about this, I'm imagining that a lot of the listeners and viewers, you know, you've thrown out a few examples here and there of like, okay, this is what this could look like when a couple is talking. And this is, talk about even like your own interactions in some groups with men and all this. But I know that I'm sure there's a lot of listeners, myself included, they're going, okay, but Trevor, you know, if I want to really know if I have an anxious attachment style, how do I diagnose that? What are the symptoms? What does that look like? How do I know if that's what my attachment style is?
Yeah, good. That's a great question. Well, here's the good news is that everything is on a spectrum. So it's not like you get to a certain part and you're like, oh, yep, I am, you know, anxiously attached. And the funny thing about labels is they just kind of help us keep track of a cluster of feelings or a cluster of symptoms or a cluster of behaviors, right? It's not like you catch it, right? Like a cold. It's just, oh, I've got enough of these feelings that like I could probably get help from somebody who says, I help you with those feelings. And so that's the whole point, right? It's not to label yourself. It's just to help yourself give you a framework to work from, essentially. And so here's the
idea. It's going to give you a starting place, right? It just kind of gives you a starting point. Yeah.
Totally. So here's what I always say. I say generally there's some sort of fear of abandonment is one thing that really resonates with the more anxiously attached. They're afraid that others are going to leave in some sense, right? And or a fear of rejection, fear of losing connection with others. They're all kind of the same thing, right? It's like slightly different flavors of the same treat. It's like, yep, that's all ice cream. Like it's all kind of similar. It just tastes a little bit different, right? Fear of abandonment, fear of losing connection, fear of rejection. And it's oftentimes coupled with an anxiety, which is also another word for fear, right? So you can call it anxiety. And then it's kind of doubled down with this negative view of self that's reinforced through the pattern that I was talking about earlier, right? The more anxious I am, the more like I maybe try too hard to fit in, the more I try too hard, the more rejection I get. And the more rejection I get, A, the more anxious I am that I'm going to get that. And then B, the more I start to feel doubting of myself, like I don't feel like I'm good enough. And the more I don't feel like I'm good enough, the more anxious I'm going to be that others are also going to see me as not good enough. And you can see how it just adds on. So it's two main pillars, fear of abandonment and the sense of kind of lack of self-worth or a negative view of self, however you want to call that. And here's a little caveat too. I have to say this. You might be listening to this and going, well, Trevor, not all of me feels that way. Like I don't always feel that way. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. No one really... Well, not no one, but most people that I work with say that's actually just a part of me. And that part of me shows up in these particular areas of my life. But in other areas, I'm fine, right? I mentioned for me, career, I was very confident. I felt amazing when it came to that. When it came to dating and social, I did not feel amazing. It definitely showed up there.
Yeah, one of the things I would say as one of the example that came to my mind when you were saying that of people saying, hey, it's just a part of me, you know, blah, 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 is I thought it's kind of like if you have a rock in your shoe and you're like, well, I only feel it when I'm walking, right? It's like, it doesn't bother me if I'm sitting down or if I'm late, you know, sleeping or whatever. And so it's kind of like that. It's like, but do you want to live the rest of your life with a rock in your shoe? You know, it's like, because you do walk a lot, you still walk, you know, so you still want to deal with it. And I think the irony to me, or maybe it's a little bit of a paradox here, is especially when you're talking about anxious attachment, and you've mentioned many times about how that can start to snowball into a lot of self-fulfilling prophecy of, because I'm anxious, I'm going to be awkward in situations, or I'm going to not put myself out there and do these kind of things. And more that rejection actually gets confirmed, right? Because then it's like, nobody wants to be around the needy, funny guy, right? It's like, whoa, my goodness. And so, my biggest question is, well, twofold. One is, what does the process look like for going from anxious attachment to secure? And how do you even take that first step when you have a anxious attachment?
Yes. Like, yes.
What does that even look like?
Oh, so I have to tell you a story for this to make sense. So there's many first steps. And it's kind of hard to know which first step to give you. But I will say there's two. I'll save my story for a second. But we've already mentioned one of the first steps that if someone's listening closely to this, they're probably already doing it right now. So good news, you're already doing your work. Like, hooray for you. Amazing. The first step that's foundational to this work is what I call mapping out your anxious attachment cycle. And the anxious attachment cycle is the one I've been describing, where your anxious behavior only reinforces your negative feelings about yourself and so on. And there's a little acronym that I like to use that I'm going to give to you guys here to help you map your own. It's a framework that you can use anytime. And it's the word tempo, T-E-M-P-O, kind of like tempo or a beat. And I like that because anxious attachment definitely has a rhythm. It happens in patterns and it happens over and over again. So the tempo of anxious attachment is where you start with T, and that's where you write down your trigger. The moment that you feel anxious, right? Let's take a really classic one. Maybe your partner kind of comes home quiet and they're in their head a little bit. They're quiet. Maybe they seem frustrated even. You can see that there's frustration. Maybe they're like, you know, angrily cleaning the dishes or something, and you don't actually know what's going on. So that's the trigger, right? And it could be a million triggers. I didn't get the text back. I'm going to do fun things with friends And they're doing something that I don't really know how to do. Like for me, it's volleyball. I hate volleyball. I suck at it, but everyone is so good at it here in Hawaii, but I'm way bad at it. So whatever the trigger is, you write that down. Next piece is the E, is the emotion that that trigger brings up inside of you, which is maybe anxiety, fear, a little bit of panic, just discomfort, just tracking the emotion, writing it down. We're not doing anything with it yet. We're just writing it down. The M is the meaning. This is the meaning that you make out of that trigger. The story you're telling yourself in your head: my partner's doing dishes angrily, so they must be mad at me. They must not like me. They must think that I'm, you know, so horrible and whatever else. I'm going to go play volleyball right now and everyone's going to think that I'm so uncoordinated and they're going to think less of me because I'm not good at it. Right? It's the meaning that you're making. So right now, again, we're not doing anything with it. We're just writing down the story that you're telling yourself in your head. And then the P is where you start acting in your cycle. This is P of protection. Protection might look like, oh, I'm just going to totally avoid volleyball at all costs. If I know that they're playing, I'm not going and I'm going to stay home. Or P of protection is maybe you kind of get critical of your partner and you're like, hey, why are you being so mad? Like, what are you doing, right? Like kind of coming down on them, almost like trying to get an answer out of them. Or maybe you come in with a lot of, hey, how are you doing? What's going on? And maybe they're not in a mood to answer it, but you keep pushing and you keep pushing because you need to find the answer. Because if it means that they're mad at you, then you got to fix it. And if they're not mad at you, then you really want that relief. So you're after the answer. So you're protecting yourself. Or maybe it looks like, you know, double texting, sending somebody a lot of texts when they're not texting you back. It's that anxious behavior. And then the O is the outcome that those anxious behaviors create, right? Volleyball, I'm isolated and I don't create deep connection with my friends, which is the very thing that I want. My partner, maybe they get defensive and mad, and maybe they do become mad at you and they weren't mad at you in the first place. They're mad at, like, I don't know, HR. People can be really mad at HR. We'll just use that. That's good. Or maybe they're, you know, frustrated about one of the kids doing something, right? The not getting the text back. Oh, they were actually just really busy, but now they're feeling a little overwhelmed by that relationship because you're just texting them a whole lot. So we start to map out the outcome. And here's the stinging part of it all, is the outcome becomes the new trigger. The loneliness, the night home alone instead of playing volleyball makes me feel like I'm a loser and I go back into the cycle. The defensiveness from your partner, oh, becomes definitely a new trigger. That's easy to explain, right? Somebody pulling back from a relationship after receiving all those text messages, that can be definitely triggering. And so when we map out this cycle, it empowers us to break it because we can interrupt it at the emotion level through maybe it's just some emotional regulation. We can interrupt it at the meaning level because we start being able to learn, oh, wow, those are the stories I'm telling myself. Maybe I need to adjust those stories and I can. You can interrupt it at the P of protection. You're just like, well, I still feel panicked. I'm still making this meaning in my head, but I'm going to go play with my friends and we're going to play volleyball and I might not be good at it, but that's okay. Right? It's interrupting the pattern at many points in the pattern gives you so much power. And also even just the act of mapping it out gives you distance from it. So many of the people that I work with in my program, it's called the Secure Self Club, because that's our goal, is to become our most secure selves. What we do is we use the tempo cycle as like the foundation for almost everything. Right? They're talking about a situation throughout the week. I say, cool, plug it into the tempo cycle before we do any work on it. Like, what's going on? And they'll do it. And even by the time they're done doing that, they're like, oh, I think I know what's happening. Like, I'm clear. I don't even need to ask you questions today. I'm like, okay, you got it.
Right. Well, and I think everything that we've talked about to this point is so important because it's kind of like, you know, this is parallel. It's not equivalent, but it's like the idea of when you're not feeling well and you need to go get a diagnosis to figure out what. So you need to see somebody that's going to help you diagnose that, not because we're going to label you, you know, someone with chronic allergies, that is your scarlet letter to wear for the rest of your life. But so that you can go, well, what's the treatment plan? Like, what is the process? And I feel like that's the stages you've mapped out here. Hey, we've talked on a broad scale about these attachment styles. If you start to realize, hey, you know, I kind of come in under this anxious attachment. Now I've got a tool with tempo to be able to say, what does that look like? So then where do you go from there that leads you towards secure attachment?
Great question. So there are so many things that you can do from there. And I kind of started to mention a few of them, right? Regulate those emotions at the E, challenge the meaning that you're making at the M, just do something different at the P of protection. But let me share with you maybe what most people aren't going to tell you, which is the deeper work. You know, we talked about how emotional experiences create, emotional experiences create your attachment style. And so we need to create new emotional experiences, but specifically, I want to help you create new emotional experiences for the part of you, the part of your nervous system that is wired for anxiety right now based on previous experiences. And this is the story that I'm going to tell you to illustrate how we do that. One day I'm sitting in Chick-fil-A. I'm just, you know, eating the Lord's chicken, not on Sunday, obviously. And I was watching this dad interact with his daughter. She's probably 4 years old, and she's going in and out of this play place. And her little feet are just bare, you know, patter, like slapping on the tile. And she's like sweating. She's just getting so into it. You know, her hair's sticking to her face. And she's coming back. She's getting a bite, like a little fish, you know, just opening up her mouth, gets a bite and runs back, and just the cutest thing in the world. And I'm watching dad, and he's, you know, just having a good time. And it comes to that moment that every four-year-old just despises when it's time to leave Chick-fil-A, because they're just in their zone. They're having the best time. But dad turns to her and he says, "Hey, sweetie, it's time to go. We're going to go home." And, you know, the kind of meltdown moment begins a little bit. And just like any child should, she believes things that are irrational. And I say they should, because that's how children are. That makes sense. Of course, they're going to believe things that aren't true, that are irrational. And she starts to vocalize these irrational thoughts that she has. "Dad, you're being so mean right now." Thought number one, that's not true. Dad's not being mean, but, you know, that's what she says. "And Dad, we're never coming back." Okay, well, that's not true. But she says it, and she feels it, and she believes it. And she's like, "I'm going to be so sad and so mad for the rest of the day." Probably also not very true, even though the rest of the day is not very long. She'll probably snap out of it pretty quickly. But in that moment, it feels like she's always going to feel this way, that dad's being mean and that they're never coming back. And what dad didn't do was grab her by the hand, rip her out of Chick-fil-A and say, "We're going home," and throw her in the car. What he did do is a model for how we can interact with our inner child, or that part of our nervous system that's been wired towards fear of abandonment, fears of not being good enough. And he leaned down first, he got on her level, and he goes, "Oh, you are so sad right now, aren't you?" Just recognizes her. And all of a sudden, she starts to kind of tune in with dad. He's building trust with her. And she's still pretty upset. She's like, "Yeah, I'm sad." And she's still pretty upset. And he goes, "Oh, I know that you're so sad. That makes so much sense." He validates her. And the freak out that she's experiencing starts to get a little quieter. She's like, you know, gets to that place where she gives that cute little, "Yeah," that kind of squeaks through the tears and the throat that's still a little bit closed up from being crying, you know, "Yeah," as she wipes her tears. And he goes, "Oh, sweetie, I'm so sorry. I hate feeling sad. That's hard. And I know you're afraid that we're never coming back. I heard you say all that. You know, you love it here." And she, you know, she throws in, "Yeah, I love it. They have red chairs." That's the cutest thing in the world. I love that, you know. And he goes, "They do have red chairs, and I love them too," right? He just meets her in her truth. He doesn't try to change it, even though it's not true. It's what she believes. He doesn't try to change it. He validates it. He loves it. But, and on that foundation of trust that he builds, he then can challenge her truth and take care of her and be the leader for her. He says, thank you, sweetie, for telling me all of that. I appreciate it. But let me remind you that we come back here all the time. Your cousins, anytime they have a soccer game, where do we come? She said, well, we come back here. Yep. And dad's not trying to be mean. Your mom's waiting for you at home and she's so excited to hear about your day. Do you want to go tell her about your day? And she's like, yeah, I want to go tell her about my day. And all of a sudden she's starting to recognize things that are true that she forgot about in her fears and in her irrational place. And he says, you know, the chairs are red and that's really cool. And maybe we can get a red chair sometime. And she says, Dad, thank you so much. That would be so fun. And he reminds her of other things like her princess bed at home and all the things that are good about leaving. And she leaves willingly. She does not leave kicking and screaming and fighting. She leaves willingly, naturally. She's running out the door at this point towards the better plan. And I tell that story because sometimes we see the anxious attachment within us as a problem to be fixed rather than a part of us that needs to be loved. And it is the latter. It is the latter. There's a part of you that was created in childhood that feels anxious and fearful, that carries irrational beliefs like everybody's going to leave. Everyone, you know, I have to prove that I'm lovable and I'm not good enough, just like the little girl had irrational beliefs. But if we can, like the loving father in the story, turn towards that internal part of us, and I can explain specifically how in a minute here, but as we turn towards that internal part of us with that same validation, that love, that energy that says it's okay to feel this way, and we provide a new path or a new plan, we will start to create the emotionally transformative and healing experiences that our inner child or nervous system needs in order to heal and become secure.
Yeah, that's good. And as you were saying that, one of the things that came to my mind was even what we are told about Jesus, that he was full of grace and truth, that it wasn't, you know, it's like, so there is a sense in which even in his person and what he brings to us, he's saying, I have truth and grace in all fullness. So even as you were saying that, it wasn't as if the dad was going to go, hey, you know what, I'm going to abandon everything that's actually true in this kid's life, just so I can only validate the feeling. It's like, I'm going to do that and I'm going to draw her into what is actually a bigger reality that she doesn't see right now. And so I think that's a beautiful thing. So as we've got a few minutes left here, but just take us to that next step then in terms of what that looks like as a continuum. You talk about this being a process. It's a spectrum. Yeah. This obviously is a journey. It's not something, because you're not in a static position in your attachment style, even if you're anxious, you've got an anxious attachment, it doesn't also mean that you're going to reach some point where you're static in your secure attachment. So just talk about how it's always a growth mission. You're always on a journey to continue to grow in these areas.
Totally, totally. So it is a journey. And that's why what we've created in the Secure Self Club, we follow a specific method that's based on evidence-based practices that we've drawn from research combined with what we've found to work through just our own work. And we call it the Secure Self Journey. It is a journey. And I'm talking about maybe a couple of steps on that journey, but there's a lot more to it. And, you know, if you were to say, Trevor, how do I tangibly take what you told me today about the interaction with the dad and the little girl, but do it for myself internally? It maybe starts with recognizing the unmet needs of your own childhood, where maybe you needed validation. Maybe you needed to be heard or seen. And in the moments where you feel triggered, when you're in your tempo cycle, you feel the emotion, you're starting to make those negative meanings in your head, I want you to recognize those feelings and recognize the meaning that you're making, the story that you're making, that voice in your head that tells you that you're not good enough or whatever else, that's actually just a little voice. It sounds like your voice, but much younger. It's your little you that they're just trying to protect you. And maybe it looks like closing your eyes and just touching where you feel it and just kind of saying those kind of words that the dad at Chick-fil-A might say, like, I see you. I know why you feel this way. I remember what happened. long ago that caused you to feel this way? Of course you do. And I appreciate that you're trying to take care of me, trying to warn me that others are going to leave or abandon me. And then maybe it looks like revealing truth, right? Like, hey, remember that even if they did abandon us, that no matter what happens, we have a loving Father in heaven who is guiding all of it. And he doesn't want us to suffer any longer than we have to. And so maybe we'll trust him, and maybe you can trust me to guide you through this. And maybe we can trust our friends that they're a lot more loving than we make them out to be. Or we trust our partner that they're a lot more loving than we make them out to be. And trust ourselves that we can take care of ourselves, even, you know, trusting me. I'm almost talking to my inner child, you know, trust me that I'm the one that can hold you and help you when maybe all other lights go out and nobody else is there for you. Like, I can take care of us, and I know how, right? I know the power of prayer. I know the power of all sorts of things that help. And so it's looking like that inner dialogue is part of this process. And so that's kind of one little snapshot. It's kind of hard to tell you how. In our program, we actually lead people through like visualizations, like guided experiences where we actively do this. Yeah, it's pretty powerful. Sometimes we like use music involved in it. Our goal is to create an emotionally moving experience that heals you from the deepest parts on out.
Yeah, that's so good. And yeah, there's no way we can cover all of this in just a short podcast. But as we do wrap up here, Trevor, where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about what you're doing in this with this Secure Attachment Club?
Yeah. So there's two things. One, I'll tell you what, just like Dad was gaining trust, I want to gain trust with you guys, right? We had our first little interaction. You could do two things. If you're like, hey, I want to learn a little bit more and build some trust before I'm ready to do something like, you know, book a call and learn about the program, well, then go do my free seminar. I've got a free seminar. It's 45 minutes, and it teaches you the four essential elements that honestly most people are missing in their healing, even if they're in therapy, even if they're listening to the podcasts and reading the books. Four things that you need if you want to heal an anxious attachment. And you can go and watch that. And in the end, there's an invitation that if you want to, you know, book a discovery call where you learn about our program, you can. And that's awesome. You'll talk either, depending on kind of what's going on, either with myself or a member of my team. And then if you're like, hey, Trevor, based on this call, like, I know that I already want to do this work and I want to learn more, then you can also directly book a call. And you can find that through my Instagram or any other social media at, the Art of Healing by Trevor is my handle, or you go to theartofhealingbytrevor.com. You can find me there. And I'm sure you can probably find the links that you need like in the show notes, because usually that's what most podcasts do. I'm sure, John, you'll help us out there.
Yeah. Well, Trevor, this has been a great conversation. Thanks again for being with us today.
Yeah. Thank you. I have loved having it.
Yeah. Well, and we are going to put a lot of links in the show notes to make sure that people are directed to all those things. Not only that, but you've also got some other resources that are available for folks, and we'll make sure everybody gets that. But listeners and viewers, we're always glad that you're with us. We want to help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. And so reach out to us and we'll help you do that. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.